For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick coming to you with a special episode with a couple of big moves made here during the what used to be called the legal tampering period and is now called something else that's euphemistic to that. But joining me to do that is Paul S. You know him as the NFL analyst on Twitter. Paul, how you doing?
Great, Ken. How you doing?
Good to have you back on again. So the Ravens bring home Patrick Ricard. Let's talk about him first. We'll save the best for dessert here. But Patrick Ricard, a one-year contract's worth approximately $2.8 million, but it only counts about $1.4 million against the cap because it is a qualified veteran contract.
Right. Yeah, pretty much about what we thought. Wasn't the 2 years that I thought, but one for three, I thought, two for five, one for three, about the same thing. So, and it's good, like you said, we can use that veteran benefit. So save about $1.5 million there this year on the cap. And Ricard said plenty of times after the season that he wanted to be back. And I didn't have any doubt that they were going to get something done with him. And that's what they did.
Yeah. It really is. He has kind of a local ad thing. I've talked about that, so I don't want to go into it again. But there is a consequence from this because, and this is something I just learned today, you're only allowed to have two such contracts on your team. And you can split up what basically is a little less than $1.5 million between those two contracts in terms of qualified veteran money. Now, what they didn't do is it looks like Ricard got the whole thing. And they could have saved some for use on Tylan Wallace. So it may mean they already know Tylan Wallace not going to be back with the Ravens, or that they want to sign him maybe for a little bit more. If they want to sign him for 2 years, $6 million, that might be a reasonable number for Tylan Wallace, or 2 years for $5 million, something like that. He may have another bigger deal. I'm looking at all these contract values. Every one of them seems to be very high, as is often the case, by the way, in the early days of free agency.
Yeah, I'm glad you addressed that $1.5 million because I was going to ask you, there has to be a limit, on how much of that veteran qualification you can use, because I couldn't imagine you could just, do it with anybody. So, yeah, $1.5 million, and looks like, yeah, Ricard took up all that.
So it's up to two contracts for up to $1.5 million total, as I understand it. And Brian McFarland explained it today to me, and I trust him on the extreme nuances of the cap. He's definitely my go-to resource. So anyway, let's talk about 2024 for Ricard. Kind of an interesting year for me. At 495 snaps, exactly matching his 223 total under Monken. That includes the postseason and same number of games in total each year. He had 747 in his final year with Roman, so 50% more when the Ravens were running super heavy in 2022. In 2024, they ran heavy, they ran light, depending on game and depending largely on game script.
Yeah, Ricard is, like you said, I didn't even realize he had that many under Roman. But yeah, it's the proper contract for how much he's used right now with how much the offense has grown as far as just leaning on the running game so much. They can pretty much do whatever they want now on offense. So it would only be natural that his snaps would kind of come down a little bit with this kind of new offense, what they're running in, especially with our new addition that we just added today as well on the outside.
We'll talk about him in a couple of minutes here. If we want to keep it with Ricard here for a moment, he has lots of pass blocking assignments this last year. One of his primary things was to provide assistance basically to Rosengarten on the right side. Now, not 100% of his pass blocking snaps came there, but an awful lot did because that's the side where the Ravens used additional set and chip blocks more than on the left. And, it's not like he doesn't do other things on pass play. Occasionally runs a pattern. there's usually a chip block involved because they're not depending on him to run wheel routes or, you know, releases that get him pretty particularly far down the field. He's a very limited set of receiving responsibilities with the Ravens.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking of, Kyle Juszczyk got released earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting timing. And maybe it might have affected Ricard in a little bit of way because two fullbacks on the open market is kind of flooding the fullback market these days. So that might have had a slight impact, if anything.
When I saw it, I thought he's going to be very likely to re-sign when I saw the when I saw that Juszczyk was left, because I thought that, you know, the incentive would be there, Juice would be on the market, he would be potentially another guy they could go to. I don't think he exactly fits the Ricard bill. Ricard, in addition to the pass blocking component, and the other thing he does extremely well for the Ravens is allow them to run the football when the other team knows it's coming.
Yeah, when you've got a 300-pound fullback in the backfield, and many times last year, they were in certain formations where you knew what they were going to do, and they were just daring you to stop it. And most of the time, the other team just could not stop it.
Yep. And they certainly had a lot based on game script they did that allowed them to use Ricard effectively to run out some games, to get some games done with. I thought his season overall, it wasn't particularly great. I think it was a little more challenging in terms of blocking assignments, given the game script based situations he was in for. If he's in on first down in the first half, as he was typically in the Ravens offense, in the Roman offense, then he's getting an easier set of opportunities to block on. The opposing defense does not know necessarily what's coming. In the fourth quarter, last 6 minutes, Ravens starting from their own 20, the opposing team knows exactly what's coming. And that's not as easy a blocking opportunity for Ricard, because teams know they have to really, in a lot of cases, have to game plan against him. But, you know, B- overall season, as I saw it. How would you grade his overall season?
Yeah, I would agree. Like you said, his kind of sweet spot is, you know, late game, we're up by a couple scores, and we just need to shove it down their throat, and that's where he comes into the fold perfectly. And we had maybe a few less of those games last year, so it's kind of understandable. But yeah, about a B-, B+, somewhere around there.
You know, maybe a good example of the point I just made about how it's easier to block early in the game is the crack toss on the very first play against Buffalo in Week 4. So, you know, nothing game. Ricard's lined out, and he cracked back into the formation on the right edge to clear the way for Henry. And it was the sort of play the opposing defense doesn't necessarily know what's coming. They hadn't run a lot of those at that point in the season either. Henry obviously found the crease, but Ricard cleared the way with that block. There's another good block, might have been a receiver, but I'm not sure who it was, in Level 2. Might have been Likely on the play who made a block as well. But
yeah, I think it was Likely. Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, easier to know when the opponent does know the run is coming. They can know to look out for Ricard more easily. Well, let's look forward to 2025. What do we hope for? Where do you start with what you hope for from Ricard in 2025?
I mean, maybe just do what you did last year, maybe just a little better. Maybe you have a few more opportunities. If we can, like I said, get up, you know, late in games to where we can really use him and really put a hurting on people when we're trying to run that clock out, I think that's where his ideal role would be to slide into. So like I said, hopefully, you know, everything goes well in offense and we can stay healthy and we can get some of those leads late. You know, that's where he's going to shine.
He played 495 each of the last 2 years. I'd say anywhere between 400 and 500 or even more is okay. The higher is better because that reflects positive game script. It's hard for me to imagine the Ravens having more positive game scripts than they've had the last 2 years when they've been very dominant and have had a lot of big leads. But I suppose it could happen. I'll tell you one other thing that I really want from Ricard this year is I want to see no substantial uptick in right side pressures, meaning offensive right side. I don't want to see a big uptick in pressures. And it's not really fair to make that his job and not Rosengarten's, but I've got to figure that he's going to be used as one of the plugs if Rosengarten is having trouble over there.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And you would hope that from Rosengarten, you would get a little improvement in his play just overall. So that would lend itself to you know, Ricard having to stay on that same path and not drop off as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, you could use Ricard less if Rosengarten plays better. So that's definitely a potential benefit of that. And I'm not talking about a lot of less snaps, but you might be able to cut out 25 snaps if Rosengarten is playing better, snap and a half per game kind of thing. I think we always take for granted with an older player that things are going to be able to continue along the same line. Just had this discussion about Ronnie Stanley and actually solo discussion. So I guess that doesn't make it a discussion, but you know, Ronnie Stanley is getting up there and he hasn't been healthy all the time. And he just led all left tackles in snaps in 2024. It's probably not reasonable to expect him to be as healthy and expecting that of Ricard, you know, when he basically plays every game and plays, you know, a decent amount of snaps in 24, might be unreasonable to expect that same thing in 25, particularly with no concession to age in terms of the quality of his play.
Right. Yeah. As Ricard gets up there in age and, you know, he's playing a position where he's smacking guys on pretty much every play. So you definitely need to be concerned about how much he's getting used and making sure you're not using him too much, you know, as he ages and as he gets a little older.
Yeah, significant hip injuries in the past. They remarkably have not been back. I mean, obviously the Ravens went through the Dennis Pitta era where hip injuries had a way of recurring, and you know, no shade on Dennis here. His career just didn't work out largely due to injuries. And Ricard has overcome injuries in a very positive way during his career. Let me ask you this. Does this mitigate or put off by a full year the need or desire for the Ravens to develop their next fullback? And I'll say at least a full year. I mean, hey, I guess there's nothing saying that Ricard couldn't play three more years, but where are you with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would stop them from developing the next guy. I mean, I don't think there's any harm in maybe trying to find a UDFA or a real late pick, you know, put him on the practice squad, kind of get his feet under him and just, you know, see what happens. Maybe works out, maybe doesn't, but you always want somebody on the back burner, especially, you know, as Ricard ages. You know, like you said, you never know when, you know, it might start falling apart a little. So you always want somebody behind there to kind of be pushing him and seeing what you have in him, you know, from maybe a UDFA or late round pick standpoint.
Yeah, the word will get out if they have one. But the nice thing about a fullback as opposed to a defensive lineman or an offensive lineman or defensive lineman, everybody knows you got him. Everybody has the need for those positions, but there's not that many teams that actually need a fullback. So if you have an offensive lineman / fullback or a defensive lineman / fullback, you got a good chance not to lose that player as opposed to any other position. Okay. Sorry. If he's on the roster, you won't lose him. If you have an offensive lineman, if you have a defensive lineman who's not thought of highly as a defensive lineman, who's on your practice squad, then other teams, they may assume he's just a defensive lineman who's not very good because they've seen his college tape, or they may assume you're trying to develop him into a fullback, which doesn't really affect their plans. And so I think you've got a chance to hide a player like that on the practice squad. The problem is, I still look back to the Ben Mason era, and Mason never did a damn thing for the Ravens. I mean, it wasn't just a matter of he wasn't good enough to make the team after being drafted the same year that Stevens was. It was a matter of he really didn't do anything right in camp. He ran a lot of crappy routes. He dropped the football a few times. I mean, it's just like there were a lot of things that went wrong with Mason.
Yeah, that was the one pick that I think everybody had kind of scratching their head from day one, pretty much. And it just never panned out.
He was a UDFA all the way, and they had other defensive linemen, at least they could have taken a flyer on at that point. So, it was a frustrating pick. And then to have him go to the Patriots right away kind of sucked. All right. So we're both in agreement. You still could try and develop a fullback this summer. I still would call the move overall. It's a Band-Aid. It still could be something that would work out for 2 or even 3 years, I suppose, but low cost. And unlike the next guy, I think there's a fairly narrow set of expectations for Patrick Ricard as opposed to most players his age. He thinks he could get old in a hurry and not as useful, but I think that the actual, the what I would put as like a standard deviation either way of my expectation of performance is not all that high for Ricard. Whereas the next guy, I think it could be significantly higher.
Yeah, I totally agree. Your range on Ricard is definitely going to be a lot different from maybe a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, who last year had, I mean, honestly, I was looking, if he did what he did last year, this year for us, I mean, I think that would be 600 yards, 5 touchdowns. I think that would be just fine. Maybe if he has a great year, he goes maybe to 700, 750. But I don't think anything beyond that is really realistic in this offense with who's ahead of him in the pecking order. So, yeah, I mean, and the price, I mean, I just could not believe what we got him for.
It's a reasonable price this time around. It's not the Odell Beckham, you know, 5-star restaurant charge for a 3-star a meal. You know, so it's not that. It's 1 year, $5 million, incentives to $6 million is what I've been hearing generally. It might be a little bit different from that, but materially and qualitatively, it's not different. He'll be 33 in June. This is more of the older wide receiver treadmill for the Ravens. So there's a lot of people who are going to be upset by this. I'm upset when you try and get your top receiver to be that guy, like going out and getting Steve Smith while he was very good, or, you know, Michael Crabtree or a number of other players who you get at that age. I can't get excited about him if they're the number one or number two wide receiver target. That's not the case with DeAndre Hopkins. He's no threat, absolutely zero threat to supplant either Bateman or Flowers. He is a replacement for Aguilar. That's what you think about him. And if you manage your expectations based on that, you still could be disappointed because Aguilar was pretty good in his 2 years with the Ravens in toto, but he wasn't that great in 24.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's very clear. One thing I was thinking about going back to OBJ was we way overpaid on that one. And it feels like we're getting a lot of value here. So maybe it kind of evens out, you know, in the overall scheme of things. Cause I think PFF, which is pretty accurate on their predictions, they had him at 2 for 20. So 1 for 5. Yeah, off of that prediction. Great thing. But yeah, okay. I think Hopkins is coming into the perfect situation here. Like the perfect role, the perfect situation. There's no pressure on him to go out and be that guy he used to be. You know, he can take his shots. He can pick his spots. He's definitely has a little different skill set than the two we have currently at the top. So I think it's an absolutely perfect fit.
I do think it's a good fit. It protects them in case of injury. Really hope Hopkins does not display any diva characteristics here because he's not going to be a big target guy. I mean, the last year he had, I want to say it was about 80 targets between the two teams. Yeah, 80 targets and he caught 56. And there were a lot of things about it that were really good. He had a 70% catch rate. That was just a tick off his career high, second best he's ever had. 60% success rate. Again, just a tick high. His best ever in a season was, sorry, for success rate was 61.3% when he was AP1 in 2018. So, you know, he had a good year last year. A lot of that was with Mahomes. Mahomes is very good on third down, but Jackson does a lot of that well as well. But it's been 5 years since DeAndre Hopkins has made a Pro Bowl. So we don't have to have expectations. Oh, he's got 1,000 yards or this or that, or he's going to be the number one X receiver. None of that crap is coming true. If you have that, you know, wake up from your dream and realize that this guy probably is going to, I would say, 400 receiving yards. I expect it to be less than with a team like the Chiefs, where they're throwing more as an integral part of their offense, and the Ravens are going to throw less because they're beating the crap out of opponents so regularly. And the offense runs through Lamar. It doesn't run through any other individual player. So diva wide receivers are kind of buyer beware, or I guess contract signer beware in this case.
Yeah. As far as the diva thing, the one thing I'll say to that is he clearly wanted to be here because I don't think there's any doubt that he could have gotten more elsewhere. So that, and there's always been a little kind of love affair between him and Lamar going back, you know, years. Somebody, I just saw a picture posted of Lamar, yep. D-Hop, and Henry. I think it was on, may have been right after the draft or night of the draft. So there's some good chemistry there already. So, like I said, I think this is the kind of the Lamar effect I thought would take place. I think Hopkins wants to be here. He wants to win a championship. And I don't suspect we're going to have any diva issues when it comes to him, just because of all that. And like you said, just because of what his role is going to be and where he's going to fit in, because I think he'll fit in perfectly.
Right. Well, I hope you're right. I mean, the Ravens, you know, aren't a team that runs 11 personnel a whole hell of a lot. And, you know, this could actually mean something for Mark Andrews in terms of him not being here. But either way, the Ravens still run a lot of 12 personnel relative to other teams, National Football League. They're, even with such incredibly reduced heavy personnel from the final year of the Roman era, where they were the heaviest team in decades, they're still the heaviest team in the NFL by a wide margin, even using the Monken formula. So I still expect fairly little 11 personnel. And I think the way that he'll get his snaps and the way that he'll succeed in Baltimore will be very different. It'll be fewer snaps, fewer targets, higher per snap and likely per target productivity, very much like the tight end group has worked out over the last 2 years. And he'll work in a fresh legs offense, which, by the way, is something the Saints did in the glory Drew Brees years. Is they were running, you know, five different eligible receivers off the field play after play. So your offensive lineman, your quarterback, they stay on, but you switch two tight ends, you switch two wide receivers, and you switch a running back, and maybe you switch a fullback in there for a tight end or even for a wide receiver. They had fresh legs on the field all the time, and I think this offense can really benefit from that. If they apply that to an older player like Hopkins.
Yeah. Piggybacking off of that, I wanted to ask you, what do you think are some formations they could explore now that Hopkins is in the mix? I heard somebody say that maybe they can run a little more out of spread, with him there, or what do you think his addition means to formations and what Zay and Bate can do with him on the field?
I mean, you can run four wide out of 11 personnel, say with a tight end flexed. You can do that. I find more of the value to be in him being fresh legs who replaces one of your outside guys for a play almost as a designated receiver. So if you want Bateman playing first and third down, Hopkins comes in as the X on second down. If you want Flowers playing two out of three downs, Hopkins comes on the X maybe or at the Z on third down, say. It's either way. I think, you know, Hopkins is fairly versatile in terms of what outside spot he does. Not really a slot guy. I mean, I know I've heard a lot of people say that, but he doesn't really play very much slot or hasn't in recent years. He's a guy who really is a much more natural X receiver who he makes his living off the space budget on that left side, typically speaking, being greater for him and allowing him to make full use of his route running skills to make his opponent make a bad step. When that bad step is made, he's then outstanding.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line, just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
In terms of using his body to box out people and be a good contested catch guy. But he's not a guy who's a like a natural, shifty, whip route slot guy. You can use him at a bunch of formations. You can do some things like that, but his primary value is going to be wide left as an X and wide right as a Z, replacing Flowers on some plays.
Yeah. When I think of all the DeAndre Hopkins highlights that come to my mind off the top of my head, They're usually on the sideline. They're usually contested catches. And just like you said, he's usually boxing somebody out or using his body to gain space and somehow coming down with the ball. So yeah, I can totally see what you're talking about there, Ken.
And it's another good route running receiver, which Bateman had a great year last year, but I don't think that Lamar, you know, till that year completely unlocked Bateman's value. And I still don't think he's completely unlocked his value as a route runner, because Lamar really doesn't throw on schedule very often. He makes use of extended plays. He wants to see the player break open. And it's one of the reasons why his interception total is low, is that he's not throwing the ball before the receiver turns, either having it picked off because some cornerback behind that player is anticipating the throw, or by having the receiver be a tick late turning for the football, tipping it up in the air and getting it picked off. All of those things are help Lamar in terms of being an efficient touchdown to interception guy. And I think that Hopkins, there'll be some significant issues like there are with Bateman in terms of getting him the ball on schedule. So I think it's going to be very important for Hopkins to be a extended play receiver that Lamar can really count on. Be a guy, he's a bigger receiver at 6'1 and 210-ish. But he's a guy who can hopefully put his hand up late and get noticed and go get the football.
Yeah, I'd hope that they start building that connection early. Maybe we'll get a couple videos coming up here soon of D-Hop down in Florida working with Lamar and maybe starting to put that work in already to kind of get on the same page so they can maximize what they're doing and just be as efficient as possible, like you said.
That would be very, very positive. Hopefully, the entire four of them, the big four, can all be there. And if a Tez Walker could get involved in that kind of thing, sooner the better kind of thing. I'm not sure if there might be something with Lamar that he doesn't want to throw too many footballs in a day. And so having those guys down there, he might feel like he doesn't want to throw 80 passes in a day during the offseason and take risks like that. The Ravens may feel that way, by the way. And they tell him, look, don't go out there with anybody you know and just think that it's okay to run all these plays. But they'll get it figured out either way. And I'm like you, I really want to see that. I want to see that connection is sure what time's good for you, kind of from Hopkins for Lamar.
Yeah, and we've got no injuries, we've got no contract situations. So I don't see anything that would be stopping them this offseason that might have come up in past. So yeah, hopefully that happens soon.
Yeah, Hopkins has been 2 years of being a very healthy receiver. He's played 33 games the last in 23 and 24. He had two injured years in 21 and 22. I'm not sure if that's what you're referring to, or you're talking about other, like in the rest of the wide receiver core, in terms of being this summer. Okay. I got one other big thing I want from DeAndre Hopkins. He's going to be in the game some on early downs. Now, they may still re-sign Tylan Wallace, who this is really a great role for him. But I want enthusiastic and effective run blocking. He is a big wide receiver. He's more than capable of keeping his feet and sealing off players in level two and level three. That's an important part of being a wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens. And he can't be just a designated pass catcher here. I would almost make the claim that almost no wide receiver is good enough for that to be their sole role as designated receiver. But occasionally you have a wide receiver like Zay Flowers whose physique does not lend itself to being a good blocker. You still want to be a high effort blocker, but it doesn't really lend themselves to being a good blocker. Hopkins has the tools to be a good blocker. He just has to want to do it. And I don't know where he is on that. He hasn't really been a good blocker as PFF's a run blocker as PFF scored it the last few years. That may have been the offensive style, or it may have been him. But whatever the case, I hope the Ravens and their coaching staff and Hopkins will take the time to get that right.
Yeah, out of the big three, I mean, he's clearly the most physically gifted to get that blocking done. So I would tend to agree that I hope he's a willing participant in the run game. But once again, I think he knows what he's coming into. I don't think there's any illusions he's having of he's just going to be running out there catching passes. I mean, I think he knows what he's getting into. So hopefully that'll that'll work out as well on the edge.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people are going to be whining about this being a Band-Aid move. I don't know how many people I've already seen on Twitter saying, wow, I really wanted this move 5 years ago. Five years ago, the price was unaffordable. Now it is. Now it seems like a reasonable price for who DeAndre Hopkins is as a 33-year-old wide receiver. But I'll add this. Not only do I hope people manage their expectations about this, and I would think honestly that, you know, you're saying if he had 600 yards again, I don't see any way that happens. Okay, I don't see it as being even 25% likely that that happens. How about I put it that way? I think he's more likely to be a guy who gets between 350 and 550 yards with the Ravens. I somewhere in there would be my expectation. I think it'll be less targets, hopefully at a higher degree of efficiency. Hopefully it's going to be a really nice 450 to 500 yards, and the Ravens are going to be very happy to have him. A few TDs, fantastic. But he doesn't have to be the main piece in this offense. And if he became it, it probably means something else has gone wrong. Like Bateman has suddenly either dropped off the table in terms of production, or somebody's gotten hurt, or whatever it might be. And I'll even throw in one more on that is, if you're a Ravens fan, one of the best things that could happen in 2025 is for Tez Walker to play so well that he takes DeAndre Hopkins' playing time away. So if Tez Walker has the kind of camp, and then he goes into the season, he's just all of a sudden, it's like, who is this guy? Why didn't we have him out there more last year? And that means that DeAndre Hopkins goes down to, 350 snaps for the year and 35 targets, maybe. That's actually a good thing. It's not something we should be concerned about.
Yeah, as far as the production is concerned, I think the one big domino yet to fall, if it is Mark Andrews. Because if Mark Andrews is in the fold by whatever reason, that's going to make probably a significant difference on the amount of action he gets. If Mark Andrews isn't in the fold and maybe they draft somebody or what have you, I think maybe his production is trends a little higher just because we're losing, a huge part of the pass catching, quintet, I guess.
That is absolutely the last thing I wanted to talk about was, is this really a harbinger of either one of two extensions or a trade? It could be a harbinger of a Lamar extension. It's possible that EDC and Lamar have already talked, and EDC said, look, we can get you DeAndre Hopkins, but we really need you to sign this extension so we have room to get through the year in terms of cap. The other possibility, of course, is that we let Mark Andrews go. So, you're kind of levering, the additional receiving talent for Lamar and hoping to get the extension signed. He's primed to be signed given the other extensions that are happening all over the league. They don't, by the way, these aren't extensions that totally change the dollar value of these contracts. These are extensions which basically extend the money. And that's what those are for. So it's not something that Lamar should really be upset about. He's not taking a pay cut, certainly, with it. I don't think he's giving away too much in the future, although, depending on how his agent is chirping in his ear, his agent being his mother in this case, there may be talk of becoming a free agent at some point. I think if the Ravens are fair with him, Lamar ought to be very happy with the situation here. It's clearly worked out, and they've gotten him. I think they've done a really good job the last 2 years of getting him other players around him who were really good fits. In 2023, a good offensive line and a good, still decent running back tandem. And they went out and they got him Odell Beckham at an absurd, birthday present kind of price. And then in 24, they got him Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that was pretty good present right there. Mark Andrews does have a roster bonus due on the 17th of March coming up.
Yep.
So I expect that we're going to have some type of resolution, whatever that may be, before that date. I still don't have a feel for what they're doing or what they're trying to do. I think my stance. I'd rather extend them on a team-friendly deal, but we'll see. But, they're going to have to do something in the next week or so to make up for the cash they've just spent towards the cap a little bit, because they're just a little over now. So they're going to either have to do a restructure or something, or unless D-Hop's got void years on his deal, or something. I'm not sure how that structure is, but yeah, the next week will be very interesting, especially concerning Mark Andrews' future.
Right. And that could be true for Hopkins right now, is that he's got a signing bonus and he's got void years that they basically are running into, and it's a low cost contract. One of the hidden things about free agency that I've kind of been not too happy about so far is that there hasn't been, or have not been any big tight end deals I've seen so far. And I thought that is what can help change the logjam situation for Andrews. If some tight ends are lost and there are other, you know, fewer other options, then Andrews' trade looks more attractive to some of the teams with the young quarterback and whatnot. And I haven't seen that happen so far. I don't know how many tight ends are even free agents this year, or how many of the pretty good ones are free agents this year. But I haven't seen a bunch of tight end things. We've seen tremendously in the quarterback market. That's undergone seismic shifts, seemingly hour by hour. In the left tackle market, same thing. You know, in terms of the market changing very rapidly with big signings that are occurring. I just haven't seen it happen at tight end.
Yeah, I believe the largest deal by a tight end signed was Mike Gesicki getting re-signed by Cincinnati. I think that was 8.75 for 2 years, or 8.75 times 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, outside of that, I'm looking at the tight end contracts right now. Yeah, really has not been much movement at all on the tight end front. So
yeah, and Gesicki is perhaps in a group that you would compare him to Andrews. But honestly, a little bit below. And I think most other teams that have that young quarterback that really needs a tight end to throw to are going to want Andrews to be the Andrews of old, which I don't think, by the way, is impossible. I think he can be a bailout target for your quarterback. I just don't think it's the most efficient way to use Andrews. And the Ravens kind of proved that the last 2 years with 30 touchdowns and one interception throwing to the tight ends over those 2 years. So I hope that I hope the Ravens can keep him, but it's not realistic to keep both Likely and Andrews beyond 2025. So I think that probably means it is likely that they trade one of those two players no later than the night of the draft. And it would be the natural time to max out your value for Likely if you're going to have to let him go. And max out your value for Andrews, which is honestly, at this point, it would be primarily salvage value. But the roster bonus trigger is money the Ravens will have to eat regardless. So you're probably right that the fifth day of the league year. So maybe it's the 16th, right. Maybe it's the 17th, whichever it is. Yeah, either way, that is a very key date.
Right. And if the Ravens did have to eat that roster bonus, that makes him even more attractive as a you know, in a trade, because, you know, obviously the acquiring team isn't going to have to pay that roster bonus. So that'll give him a little added value there as well.
He's more attractive in a trade, and you could say you get that much more value for him, but the Ravens need the cap space. If they have Mark Andrews and he's only $7 million at that point, which would be the net amount they'd have to pay him for keeping him as opposed to cutting him, say, in June or in July or right at the cutdown date, then, you know, that $7 million it becomes more attractive for the Ravens to sit on him for the year to keep him and use him effectively in their offense the way they did in 24. I think it's now or not. I don't. I had forgotten about the $4 million roster bonus when I was predicting he'd be traded on draft night. Likely that is the more specific time that I would expect it to occur.
Yeah, as far as Likely is concerned, I don't think there's any chance they're trading him. I mean, I just would be – I'd be absolutely floored if that happens. So.
Nobody wants to lose him, but, Paul, right player, right place. And if they've already they should have already talked to him about an extension now. And if his agent is saying, no way in hell, you know, he's going to set the new market for tight ends, then the Ravens may have to just, you know, bite the bullet and trade him. I mean, they cannot, and they really can have only one of those two guys. It's too much overlapping productivity lost if you're paying both of them on what are essentially cornerstone contracts.
Okay, Ken. Well, then what's the compensation? If let's play hypothetical. If that happens, what would you be satisfied with compensation wise
for net trading? Of a mid to high two for likely on draft night.
Mid to high two.
Yeah. So you're trading him basically for the same value they got for both Marquise Brown and Orlando Brown. It's basically the same value in each case. Orlando Brown went for more like a mid two in net value. I think the Ravens gave up their two and they took the one and they ended up drafting Adafi Owe with it or Bateman, one of the two. And then with the with Marquise Brown, everybody says the Ravens got a first round pick, but they got a net of picks that ended up being closer to the higher in the second round value. But I think that's what you get for likely.
Yeah, if it's that, I'm keeping him. I just feel like his potential, I feel like he's just scratched the surface of what he can really do. And it's not often where I would say pay him versus trade him for that high of a pick, but I'm just really high on what likely can do in the future as the designated one target at that position.
I am absolutely as well, Paul, but I got to be reasonable about who I can afford to keep and who I have to let walk. And when I make a decision between a number of free agents, because not just him, it's Linderbaum. It's you know, what I end up paying Hamilton, although I don't think Hamilton really counts in discussion because he's headed for the Hall of Fame, definitely for the Ravens Ring of Honor, and they're going to sign him no matter what. Linderbaum, it's a question, you know, because Linderbaum could force his way out of Baltimore with the fifth-year option not being affordable for him. Travis Jones is another big one. I mean, would you rather have Travis Jones on the team or Isaiah Likely? That's a tough call for me.
If it was between Linderbaum and Likely, I'm taking Likely all day.
I'm with you.
Linderbaum versus Likely. If we had a choice, because they're going to be Likely will be a little cheaper, but not much. But they're going to be around the same-ish, 16 to 18 number probably. So if I had a choice between those two, I'm keeping Likely all day long.
Okay. And I'm with you on Likely versus Linderbaum, but that's not the question I asked. So I asked you Likely versus Travis Jones, which is obviously the hard question that you avoided. It's not clear to me which one I make the right player, right place decision on there, or even if it's the same money, who I would go with.
I take Likely in that situation too. I'm just really high on what Likely can do in the future.
Okay, then you have to have an exit strategy. If you're going to sign Likely, you need an exit strategy for Andrews, whether it's after 2025 or in the next 5 days. You need one of those two would be what I would say. Yeah,
I don't have a good answer to that question, Ken, because it's like Andrews can't play what he has left on his contract out. So what are the other options? As far as adjusting, I mean, he's obviously not going to take a pay cut. So, I mean, I'm not sure. Like I said, it's just going to be fascinating because I don't know outside of a trade or an extension how it's going to work. You know what I mean? Because it's a significant amount. He's one of the two guys, him and Humphrey, where we can address the contracts and gain significant cap space to work with by doing that. So something's got to happen, but I can't figure out what it's going to be right now.
Yeah, I've been saying the whole time I didn't think Andrews was going to be cut, but with each passing day, I think it becomes more likely. If there's not a trade partner developing, that you know they're going to end up, you know, people hated the Bolden trade, but that was basically a Bolden cut to make room for Flacco. It wasn't a trade; they got a little bit of salvage value, you know, for getting a sixth round pick for him. But Andrews, if they can't afford the contract, they're going to have to let him go and get nothing. So if they trade Andrews for a five or a six here in the next few days, it's less than I would have hoped for, but I'd be happy to get some salvage value. And I would take it as a very positive indication of their ability to re-sign Likely at that point. But it should also be something in Likely's case. It should be something that they're doing right now where they're going to his people and saying, "Hey, Isaiah, if you want to stay with the Ravens, stay with Lamar Jackson, stay in a situation that's very good for you, then we need to extend you now, which gives us the ability to cut or trade Mark." And you have to let us do that. But you're our guy long term. Mark's not going to be here any longer than 25 at the longest if you sign this deal.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Ken, because I feel like that with all these guys now and in the near future that have 1 year left, that's exactly the type of tact you got to take with them. You're like, mm-hmm. Look, we're going to make you a good offer right now. I mean, we want you here long term. It's not a low ball. It's a good offer. Win a low ball, guys. Mm-hmm. And if you don't take it now, there's a high likelihood that, you know, you're not going to be here long term. So right. It's kind of decision time. And we love you. We're making you a good offer. And, you know, this is the time to do it. So,
yeah, it's a prisoner's dilemma situation. I know there's a lot of lawyers out there who studied that, or people in business school that will get that at some point. But effectively, when you have four people that are involved in a crime, you put them all in separate rooms, and how you coerce a confession out of them is you're going to say there's only going to be one deal. And you see who you can get to break. But with the Ravens, they certainly do have a limited amount of money and a total limited amount of cornerstone players. They could have contracts out to – it could be multiple positions. It doesn't have to be to all of them. And hopefully they'll get a player to realize the value of reducing risk and signing now.
Yeah, the one thing to remember is before any other extensions of these guys happens, there are going to have to be other moves made, because those guys' cap numbers will typically rise just a little bit from where they're at. It won't be much, but it will be something. So they're going to have to make some other moves before that, to put themselves in position.
Gotcha. So an extension. So the big one is the Lamar extension. If that can occur, that would clear some space. Paul, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can reach you online.
On Twitter.com @TheNFLAnalyst. I'm there all the time. Follow me, holler at me, DM me. I'm always there.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. We have had some not gotten all of our UFA content out on time. We're going to do a lot of it, even though the players have already been signed. A couple of players have already been signed. I had to drop some and bin them just because we have them scheduled too far out. But I really appreciate people participating in that. If you still like to, hit me up with a second tier free agent, one who's not likely to be signed until after the draft, and we'll discuss that guy. The bargain bin free agents are much more interesting discussions for my money. It's where the Ravens live. It's where they find value, and it would be a good place. And somebody could have had DeAndre Hopkins, because he certainly fits that description, even though he was signed fairly early. Paul, yeah. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.